This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, America. This is Washington Watch. It is Friday, April 22nd, in the year of our Lord, 2016. If my voice doesn't sound like Tony Perkins, that's because I am not. This is Ken Klukowski, Senior Counsel and Director of Strategic Affairs for First Liberty Institute, the largest law firm in the United States exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans. Check out what we're doing at firstliberty.org. Also, legal editor for Breitbart News Network. Check out Breitbart.com to hear the news that you're not going to find anywhere else. So happy to be here, being able to guest host again for my friend Tony Perkins, speaking to all of you, the greatest radio audience in the history of mankind. Wonderful to be here with you. As we are looking at issues that America is facing in 2016, going into this huge election year, given how political that is, I should just say at the outset that, of course, Washington Watch and our related affiliates do not support or oppose any candidates for federal office, including president. Any endorsements that individuals made are made strictly in their personal capacity and do not represent Washington Watch or those who carry the program. Beyond that, they do not represent the views of First Liberty Institute or Breitbart News Network. I am here as a Christian, as a citizen, as an American, as a husband, and as a father. And I am here as a concerned citizen, grateful to have the opportunity to engage with you on what these issues are going to be. We have a great show in front of us, and later on in the bottom half of this hour, we will be opening up the phone lines. Want to hear from all of you at 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. These are huge issues. We're talking about the future of our nation. We're talking about the future of our children. I know that all of you have an opinion, so we want to hear it. So if you have a pulse, you should be calling. If you can't find your pulse, call us anyways, and we will help you find it. If you truly have no pulse, then definitely call us, because it's a medical miracle, and we want to break some news with that. So on any of those fronts, we want to be hearing from you. But that'll be in the bottom half of the hour. Right up front here, we have a gentleman who has an extraordinarily interesting hypothesis, a theory regarding this election that you're not hearing from mainstream media outlets. Michael Harrington is not just a political activist as a precinct committeeman and a former political candidate. He also happens to be a mathematician, a statistician, and an inventor. And he had an interesting piece that was published by Red State where he says that this election is actually moving, that this specifically the Republican nomination process is actually destined to follow a course far, far different from what we're hearing from the media. I don't want to steal your thunder, Michael, so I'll just say welcome to joining us here at Washington Watch. And by all means, tell us what you've got.
Well, okay. So what I did is I did a breakdown of the remaining states and assigned them either to be Trump-leaning or Trump, mixed, or Ted Cruz-leaning, or specifically for Ted Cruz. By doing this breakdown and then inspecting them for what they could do, I was able to break down the probable delegate count and found that without winning four of the states that Ted Cruz is going to win, that Donald Trump has no way of avoiding a contested convention.
And which states are those? Which four states are you talking about Ted Cruz will certainly win?
Total that are in the Ted Cruz camp at this point. And Donald Trump is going to have to pull off a coup in four of those six, or somehow pull off a coup in Pennsylvania's 54 unbound delegates.
And so what would you see as the result? Okay, let's say that happens. Then how would things play out?
Well, he would still need to get three of the states because he's not going to get all 54 out of Pennsylvania, even if he really hit it out of the park. So he would have to try to get Oregon in great detail because we're proportional. Washington, same, proportional. Nebraska, I don't see that happening. South Dakota, okay, that one's a leaning tent, so there's a possibility he could pull out a win there.
Projections are based on the latest polling data that's out there, correct? Publicly acknowledged and polls that the general public has access to. Is that correct?
Mostly, yes. There's some circumstances like South Dakota you won't find available polls for. However, the insiders in the party are describing the state as leaning for Ted Cruz.
Okay, and so let's say that what you're talking about plays out. What would that mean? So you're saying then that Donald Trump, under your theory, would not be reaching 1237, and it would go to a contested convention, correct?
That is correct.
And then what are you saying would happen at the
Ted
convention?
Cruz is utterly dominating the field. I found that Donald Trump has less than 240 delegates pledged, not versus bound being the legal term, pledged being the emotional term, where they support the candidate. And at this point, I was able to prove that Ted Cruz has 760 delegates currently pledged to him.
760. Where do you get that number?
That is based upon news articles about the various states, including the Oregon delegation. We're wrapping up Oregon here. So we have Washington State, for instance, at the local level. The precinct committee people have been voting in Ted Cruz slates at the county level for going up into the state. There's almost no chance that Ted Cruz is losing Washington's 44 delegates in that way.
Okay, now it's why do you think, help me out and help all of us, Michael, to understand this. We're hearing two different narratives out there, all right? One is, for that matter, in a way, we're hearing a third. So I'll lay out each of the three. One is that there are those that say Trump is inevitable. He's on a roll. He's going to break 1237. In fact, someone from his campaign speculating that they think he could even hit 1,400 delegates before the nomination, and this whole thing will be over. So Trump is going to be the nominee. Everyone just get on board now and unify the party behind him. So that's camp number one. Camp number two says if you can stop Trump from getting to 1237, you're going to go to a contested convention. And at that point, it can go either way between Trump or Senator Ted Cruz. And then there's a third camp of those who say if Trump doesn't get to 1237, it goes to an open convention. And at that point, the party establishment elders are going to bring in some sort of white knight candidate who is neither Trump nor Cruz, and that's going to be the nominee for the party. You seem to be disagreeing with each of those three, and you're saying, no, first of all, Trump is not going to get to 1237. It is certainly going to a contested convention. Once it gets to the contested convention and goes past the first ballot, on the second ballot, Ted Cruz has it locked up. He will shut everyone else down. Is that what I'm hearing? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. Once West Virginia and California have voted, those two states guarantee that there cannot be a brokered convention. Those delegates are presented by either the candidate, in California's case, or voted on by the community, in West Virginia's case, but they're pledged. And so we're going to find that at that point, there's going to be enough delegates to prevent a brokered convention. There's no chance of that. So at that point, we have to look forward to a contested convention, and as I demonstrated, currently, Trump is losing that. In fact, it's really far more significant than the numbers that I gave you. You see, Donald Trump has only gotten 25% of his delegates to pledge to him. The other 75 are from the states where he is allowed to choose his own delegates. He's losing in the state conventions on a margin that exceeds 8-1.
On a margin that exceeds 8-1. Do you have raw numbers on that?
Well, I have presented some raw numbers on that on a recent note that I've created. I don't have access to it right now where I'm at, but the numbers include, essentially, you start looking at Wisconsin. Those delegates are created by the slate. So Ted Cruz has got his 36 and Trump has got his 6. Those are pledged delegates as well as bound, pledged and bound. We look at North Dakota.
Yes.
Ted Cruz has got 18 of his own slate, and then there's 4 more that have essentially pledged to Ted Cruz for 22. We start going through the various states, and we see that Ted Cruz has, like I said, gotten already 760 of these pledges one way or another way.
Now, why do you think we're not hearing anything anything similar to what your theory is? Why are we not hearing that from any media outlets?
We are, but it's in a different way. You see, you hear the complaints about how Ted Cruz is stealing delegates, and you hear it a lot. And that's because Donald Trump is realizing that this is where the war is, and he is already significantly behind. Ted Cruz has got 3 for every 1 that Donald Trump has got at this point, essentially, and Donald Trump has to somehow make that up. Unfortunately for him, I don't see a way for him to carry that off before Ted Cruz crosses the finish line.
Now, are you talking about Ted Cruz? You're talking about crossing the finish line at the convention, correct? Or are you saying that he's actually going to lock up, that Ted Cruz would lock up 1237 before the convention?
He'll lock up pledges, not bound positions. So he'll win on second or third ticket, probably second.
Okay, and so
Donald
what
Trump
would
has
your
no chance at first?
And so under your theory, Michael, what would you expect would be the delegate count for Ted Cruz, both in terms of delegates that are committed to him, but secondly, what you think the real number would be on a second or third ballot? If we were going to write this down, make a note, stick it on the board, and then check when the convention comes around in July to see if you were right or not, what numbers are we looking for?
The absolute floor that I'm looking at for Ted Cruz is 1,260 delegates. That's the floor. I'm not assigning a ceiling so much because Donald Trump is really not doing well in this venue.
And if your theory, because as you say, those numbers would not materialize until the convention floor, what would be the number of committed delegates, pledged delegates bound delegates, that we should be looking for in Ted Cruz's column going into the convention to have some sense that your theory may have some legs?
Sorry, I missed part of that question. There's a little static on the line.
No worries. I was saying that in order for Ted Cruz to have 1260 on the second ballot, what should be his official public delegate count in June after the last primary?
Well, when I broke down the recent efforts,
we've got 30 seconds.
Both of the candidates over 1,000 delegates, and that seems to be very reasonable. That unless Trump pulls off a couple coups. That he'll still be under 1,100 delegates and will not be able to proceed very well.
Okay. Well, thank you for being with us. Michael Harrington, again, a mathematician and statistician who has a provocative theory that was published by Red State. And we will see in time whether it's correct. We'll be back after the break.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
You get the soil ready.
You put the seeds in and then you water it.
How do you plant a garden?
I don't know.
You pray that God will give you a good harvest.
Then you have to work it to get all the weeds away.
And then God brings the plants.
Planting a garden takes planning, hard work, and God's blessing. So does creating a lasting legacy for the people and charities that mean the most to you. The AFA Foundation is here to help you sow the financial seeds God has blessed you with in order for them to blossom for generations to come. We do this by offering free consultation and assistance in the areas of charitable gift annuities, estate planning, will and trust planning, and bequests. To learn more, call 800-326-4543, extension 345, 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
As Christians, we occasionally need to retreat from the culture war for a time of renewal. The American Family Association invites you to retreat with us to the mountains of North Carolina, October 3rd through 6th, for the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove. Speakers at this year's event will include AFA President Tim Wildman, Governmental Affairs Director Sandy Rios, Messianic Jewish apologist Dr. Michael Brown, Marquis Laughlin, founder of Acts of the Word Ministries, and more. As in years past, we'll gather at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Capacity is limited to 400 participants, so make your plans to attend soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 2, followed by option 1. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th, in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina.
And we're back, America. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch, talking about what's going on in your country, the news that you're not hearing anywhere else in 2016. And now we have in this next segment a good friend of mine and a colleague, Jeremy Dice. He's going to be talking with us about just an extraordinary lawsuit that the law firm with which at which Jeremy and I work together, First Liberty Institute, again, the largest law firm in the United States that's exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty, about a lawsuit that was filed just this week in federal district court in the Northern District of Georgia. I think something that it will astound all of you to find is actually going on in the United States of America. Jeremy, thanks for being with us on Washington Watch.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ken.
Now, tell us, it's now that I've managed to build expectations sky high, perhaps, in that regard. Tell us what exactly this lawsuit is that, again, I think for many of the listeners of this show, you know, that as much as they have seen different types of discrimination against Christians in different contexts, to see something so blatantly that goes right to the heart of religious speech. Go right ahead.
Yeah, no, that's right. You know, Dr. Walsh was an associate pastor and at the time a respected member of the public health community. He was hired by the state of Georgia to be one of their district health directors in the northwest section of Georgia. After he was hired, government officials went through Dr. Walsh's sermons. He was an associate pastor at the time. They went through his sermons line by line. They found a few things that they didn't like, and then the next day they fired him. We've taken on this case at First Liberty and filed a lawsuit on his behalf because no one should be fired from their job for something that they have said in a sermon.
Now, according to the documents that were filed, the complaint filed in U.S. District Court and the documents that were attached to it, let me make sure I get the time frame correct here. On May 7, 2014, a manager at the Georgia Department of Public Health sent around an email to their team saying that Dr. Eric Walsh was going to start on a particular date. They say he's on board, he's going to start on this particular day, and thus it's clear from that that the guy had actually been hired. That was May 7. On May 14, we find documents of them discussing the fact that there are these sermons and that they divvy up the sermons, that different people are assigned to watch different sermons. They were on YouTube, correct? Is that correct? That's where they got these from?
They're in several different places on the Internet. That's right. And they actually said the human resources director actually emails his staff, including the chief operating officer of the Department of Public Health, and says, okay, I have an assignment for all of us. Uses that word, I have an assignment for all of us. They've got to watch these sermons. Now get in your head this picture here of government officials sitting around a table on email or whatever, divvying up different sermons from a church, from a pastor, and deciding which state official is going to review which sermons. And then they actually take the time, presumably on state dollars, using state computers, to listen to and read through these sermons. I tell you, that kind of thing ought to give chills down the spine of every single freedom-loving American in this country.
A government manager ordering his government subordinates on the public dime, okay, your job for the state now is you are going to listen to these sermons from what that were actually preached in a church. I mean, we're talking about an associate pastor preaching sermons in the church. You are going to examine those because those are going to be relevant to our decision as the state government as to whether this guy is going to work here. That we have that on May 14. On May 15, that they convene a meeting afterwards to discuss the matter. And on May 16, Dr. Walsh is fired. Is that correct? Is that the right chronology?
That's the timeline. That's right. They asked for the sermons. He gives it to them. They actually went out and found a couple on their own. And then the day after, he gives them those sermons. And after they've divided up those sermons and the spoil of those sermons, so to speak, the very next day, they call and fire him. And by the way, they forgot to press end on their call. And so we hear them talking afterwards.
Oh, yeah. I hear there was some sort of controversy on that. So they call him, and he's not there, so it goes to voicemail. So they leave a voicemail. And then what happened after that? They did not effectively hang up the phone before they kept talking?
Yeah, they couldn't press end on the call, and they keep on talking amongst themselves, and they start saying things like, well, there's no easy way to say, you're out, you know, and really coolly and coldly about these things. Now, keep in mind, Ken.
Now, the audio picks up them laughing, correct? Did I hear
right.
that as well?
Keep in mind that Dr. Walsh was terminated here because of the things he said in his sermons. Nothing changed in his credentials. He still had his medical degree. He still had his doctorate in public health.
Yeah, he's got two doctoral degrees,
right? He still
had
his service time serving two different presidential administrations, including President Obama, on his advisory council on HIV and AIDS, and he still started one of the first dental clinics to HIV patients in the state of California. Nothing on that had changed. The only thing that had changed was that these officials had gotten a hold of his sermons, divided them up amongst themselves, and terminated them. I'm telling you what, if this is allowed to stand, then I suppose that all of the notes that you may take at church on Sunday, perhaps that Sunday school lesson you created for the eighth grade class in your church, I guess those now become subject to the annual review at your place of employment. That's how serious this case is.
And regarding these sermons, I mean, it's he was just expressing, he was preaching according to his faith's understanding of the Bible on various issues, correct? I mean, it's not that he wasn't engaged in political activism per se or whatever. He was preaching consistent with the doctrines of that faith, the Seventh-day Adventist faith. Is that correct?
That's right. Look, he preached on everything from Genesis to Revelation, as he says. But we know, we don't actually know what offended the state of Georgia. We just simply know they read his sermons, and the very next day they terminated him. No one should be fired in this country for something they said in a sermon.
So he said some stuff in his church, and once they found out what he said when preaching sermons in his church as a pastor, he got fired.
That's right. It's a remarkable
That's extraordinary. Well, Jeremy, thanks for coming on to talk about it. My colleague Jeremy is one of the attorneys actively representing Dr. Eric Walsh. Again, check this out at firstliberty.org. Check out the facts of this case. You can't make this stuff up. Folks, we'll be back after the break. Thanks, Jeremy. God bless.
Thank you.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Japan is going to be up significantly on the week. Their markets anyway, that would be primarily due to what they've been hoping would happen, and that is their yen is devaluing big time. This is before the government had to do any kind of intervention. But look, it's looking more and more like Japan has hit a brick wall after 15 years of stagnation, 15 years of doing nothing in their economy, just plugging along. It looks like they may have hit a wall. We're going to have to wait and see, but it could be trouble because even at this drastic reduction in the yen's value, believe it or not, it needs to go down even further, and we'll have to wait and see what the government does. China, on the other hand, suffering its worst weekly performance in about 3 months. China going the other direction. Now, manufacturing has to be picking up in China since we see oil imports increasing about 13.6%. One of the reasons why oil is doing okay. Here in America, everybody's talking about earnings. Come on. When can we get off this whole earnings deal? Can we look at, like, let's use GE as an example. Great earnings. But their revenues stink. Again, sales numbers, profit numbers down. That's a big component of the Dow. Not likely to be good for the Dow components if people just look at the revenues. Caterpillar stock down 2%. Same deal. Earnings, okay. But it's the revenues, what I've been harping about for 3 years. That's what companies need to get back focused on and forget about all this monetary easing that has been propping up their balance sheets for the last 6 years.
I'll just start talking. Let me know. Very good. Everyone, we are back. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for my good friend, Tony Perkins, as you're catching a slice of real Americana there as we're talking with the production team. It's about these issues that we're facing as a country right now. Again, my normal job is as a senior counsel with First Liberty Institute and legal editor with Breitbart News, though when I'm speaking to you on this microphone, I'm doing so not for either organization nor for AFR, but speaking as an American who loves this country and wants to see us go in a direction that will see prosperity and safety return to this country, both for us and for our children. And to talk about one of the candidates who is on a mission and believes that he has a vision to be able to deliver safety and prosperity and freedom for the American people, Senator Ted Cruz. The Cruz campaign has given us one of their top surrogates. We have with us Ron Nearing, who is an accomplished public servant and political activist from the state of California, a Republican leader, a businessman, a strategic communications expert, a former Republican nominee for lieutenant governor of California, and certainly someone who is well-known and well-respected here in Washington, D.C. as a very serious political professional. And we're hoping to get his perspective on the state of the campaign and what faces the candidates, and especially his own candidate, Senator Cruz, going forward. Ron, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch.
Oh, it's my pleasure. With an introduction like that, I'm happy to come on anytime.
Appreciate that. Well, you know, it's we appreciate so much the work that you've done over the year, and so many of our guests and our listeners enjoy getting that kind of expert perspective, and we'll be interested in hearing yours as well. Now we're coming off, of course, the New York primary, and to take that as a starting point. The projections, Donald Trump did a lot better in his home state of New York than many of the pundits had projected. And they've been trying to push the narrative over the past couple days that this is proof that Mr. Trump is ascendant, that he will take the Republican nomination, that the party should unify behind him. And we're saying that Senator Cruz didn't do so well in New York. For starters, how would you respond to that?
Well, I said that there were no surprises in New York. Even John Kasich was able to win his own state, even though he won no states before and has won, you know, nothing since, you know, winning his own state of Ohio. So this was not really a surprise that Donald Trump would win in his own state. What's important is that in the five other states that were leading up to the vote in New York, Senator Cruz won in all of them. That's five victories in a row, and had a profound impact on the math as we go into the Republican National Convention and the rest of this process, which will wrap up in California on June 7th, where we're very, very well organized, and we've been preparing for this for almost a year. So this is about the top of the sixth inning. If we were to look at this like a baseball game, there are nine innings, you know, in the game. We have three innings left, and I think at the end of the day, Ted Cruz is going to be the Republican nominee for president, not on the first ballot, but on the second or third ballot, which just means we'll have a Republican nominee hours later than you would have in a traditional Republican National Convention. So we'll have a couple rounds of voting, and then we'll have a nominee. At the end of the day, though, I think it's going to be Ted Cruz, because he can unite the conservative movement and the Republican Party at the same time.
Well, Ron, let's talk about the math on that, the brass tacks, because, of course, before Senator Cruz could deliver on those promises to the nation, he would have to get to 1,237 delegates to secure the Republican nomination. Now, at this point, I mean, you're saying that, okay, he's not going to win it outright mathematically during the primaries, that this will ultimately be decided likely at a convention. That would mean, of course, by necessity, that you would deny Donald Trump 1,237 before the nomination. As we're looking at the races over this next week, Pennsylvania and Maryland, I believe, it's how do you see those near-term races coming up? How do you think the senator is going to do? How do you think Trump's going to do? How do you think Kasich's going to do? Give us your roadmap in the near term for how you're going to keep Trump from reaching that magic number before July.
Yeah, I think as we go forward, in every state which votes between now and the end of the process in June, we will pick up delegates every single day that there's an election taking place somewhere. And that's really what the name of the game is, and that is that ultimately the delegates are going to be where the party is, and about 70% of the Republican Party does not want Donald Trump to be the nominee, and so there'll be an alternative, and Ted Cruz ultimately is the candidate who is able to unite the Republican Party going forward. Now, the most favorable part of the country for Donald Trump is the Northeast, and five states in the Northeast will vote next Tuesday, the 26th. But then immediately thereafter, we move back out west, which is Ted Cruz country, and we will be having an election in Indiana, and then we'll have one in Nebraska, and Oregon and Washington. All of those states are very competitive for Senator Cruz. And then we have a slight gap, and then we vote again June 7th out west in California, New Mexico, Montana, South Dakota. So
Ron, we've got just over 30 seconds left. Tell us, just for next week, do you expect that Donald Trump is going to win each of those five states, or are you looking for an upset?
Oh no, I think both candidates will come out with delegates. What that map ultimately looks like depends on what listeners like your listeners choose to do. And we are inviting every movement conservative out there to become a part of this campaign. Join the campaign.
Ron Nearing from Ted Cruz's campaign.
I'm convinced without George Washington in American history, we wouldn't be talking today. George Washington, the father of our country, was instrumental in the founding of our nation. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, George Washington was also a devoutly Christian man. Stephen McDowell, president of the Providence Foundation, is an expert on our founding fathers, including Washington and Thomas Jefferson and others. And Stephen will be leading us on our annual spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. In addition, we're going to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate trip, but it's back to back. So if you want to go on one or the other, we welcome you. We go in June and September on spiritual heritage tours. Join us. For more information, go to our website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Parenting is a multifaceted challenge, and it's important that our kids know our values.
Equip yourself as a parent with resources from the AFA Cultural Institute and parenting expert John Rosemond. These four DVDs on biblical parenting address the issues of discipline, seasons of parenting, the folly of modern child psychology, and raising teenagers. You'll find all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute at afastore.net.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy full-time around the world. They're now taking applications, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. 337-433-5022.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
And America, we're back. We're going to open up the phone lines here in a moment. We want to hear what you have to say about the presidential election, about religious liberty, about Dr. Walsh, or about whatever else is on your mind and important around your kitchen table. We're at 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. As I've said before, if you have a pulse, we know you have an opinion on this. If you can't find your pulse, we want to help you find it. And if you truly don't have a pulse, that is honestly a miracle. And then we must hear from you. So regardless of your pulmonary status, we need you to talk with us. 866-372-7234. It's what we're seeing in this country. But before we get to our callers, is there's such a divide right now, and there's been so much discussion even in this past week. You know, people have, for example, one of the candidates, Donald Trump, said some things regarding transgender bathrooms and changing the Republican Party platform away from its pro-life plank that really got some people's attention. And for some people, they've been saying that they wonder if this election is turning the corner in that now we are actually starting to see new sides of candidates. We've certainly seen from the Cruz campaign responding to that. There were those saying that that now the real Donald Trump is emerging and that Americans need a consistent constitutional conservative like Senator Cruz. Again, here at AFR and at Washington Watch, we are not endorsing any candidates. Neither does First Liberty Institute or Breitbart News Network. But you can endorse. You can decide, and we want to know what those thoughts are at 866-372-7234. We're going to start off here with Patrick from Texas. Patrick from Texas, you're on Washington Watch.
Hey, sir. How are you today?
Doing well, thanks. What can we do for you?
Hey, listen, I'd just like to say that if anyone was caring to look, this election, or at least the Republican nomination, was already determined back at the Iowa caucus. Why do I say that? Ted Cruz won it, but the election results came in. Donald Trump, if you really liked him, I think it was 7% said that they didn't like him and wouldn't vote for him on the second ballot if he wasn't their second choice pick. But Ted Cruz was up there with 23% or something to that effect as a second choice pick, and then Marco Rubio came in behind him with about 20%. That's pretty much holding the truth as you see these delegates coming out as well and being apportioned as well. People are saying that they really, if you really like Donald Trump, you're going for him on the first vote. But after that, yeah, they break part and part ways with him. The other piece that I like
and Patrick,
is
you're
producer.
And so, Patrick, you're saying that that's not that that wasn't distinctive to Iowa. You think that's a consistent pattern across the country?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're still with us, Patrick. Go ahead. So you're okay. Saying you don't think that was an Iowa-only thing. You think that's across the country?
Yeah, I think it was Iowa. I want to say it was that primary.
All right. Well, very good. Well, Patrick, thank you for calling. We appreciate it. Turning now to Robert from Oklahoma. Robert from Oklahoma, you're on Washington Watch.
I'm enjoying your show. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks so much. As you could tell in the last segment, it's this isn't what I do for my day job, so occasionally I'll even be talking with the production team when I don't realize we're on the air. Thank you. I'm glad you are finding it entertaining and informative. What can we do for you?
Yeah, you're doing fine. Tell the boss you deserve a raise. I come from Oklahoma, and of course, Cruz carried this state. The thing I can't get my head around is the idea that Ted Cruz's wife works for Goldman Sachs. Okay,
How was that an issue for you, Robert?
Because Goldman Sachs, I worked for Lehman Brothers in New York City for many years back in the '80s, and Goldman Sachs is just a Trevi trove of bad things with regards to the company and financing those bad things. And I don't want to get into the minutia of it all, but I will tell you this. Donald Trump's running a popularity contest. I like him for a certain reason, only because he is the proverbial outsider, and he has a proven track record of bringing situations in under budget and under time. I don't see that when it comes to politicians. If anything, everything gets blown out of proportion,
Robert, do you think the skill set for a corporate CEO is the same skill set as for a military commander in chief and a national chief executive? I mean, corporate CEOs don't have to appoint Supreme Court justices or decide whether we need to go to war overseas.
Let me put it to you this way. A corporate CEO, a good corporate CEO, doesn't micromanage. Okay, he brings in people around him that do the job. He brings in the right people. Trump does have a history of being able to get things done. Politicians have lost the idea that they're public servants. Okay, that's the problem. You don't hear them talk about, I'm a public servant, I'm only here for a few years, and I'm going back to be a haberdasher like Truman, okay?
Robert, do you think that Donald Trump views himself as a servant, a public servant?
I think Donald Trump has amassed enough money and fed his ego enough that he's not in it for the same reasons politicians are in it.
I appreciate that. This is a fascinating exchange. I love getting listeners like this on our show who bring a different perspective. Were you not worried by the fact that he said he wanted to change the pro-life plank of the Republican platform this week? Is that something that impacts you? And do you think that as a businessman, that's something he should compromise on then?
Well, let me put it into real perspective for you, okay? And I think anybody can appreciate this. Do you remember the movie Braveheart?
Sure, absolutely.
Do you remember a scene in Braveheart where the King of England is talking to his son and a few others, and he says, the trouble with Scotland is there's too many Scots. And that applies to a lot of things. One, immigration, ISIS is going in and Muslim.
Does it apply to the pro-life platform of the Republican Committee?
The trouble with the Republican Committee is there's too many entrenched long-term Republicans running the show.
Robert, you're giving me the view from 35,000 feet. I'm trying to focus on one precise angle and say that there's a plank in the Republican Party platform that says unborn life should be protected, should always be protected. Donald Trump said that he wanted to insert three exceptions to that into the party platform, circumstances on which the party would say a woman should be able to have an abortion. And I want to know specifically on that, whether that change that freaked out the pro-life community this week, whether that's something that concerns you.
It absolutely concerns me. I'm a Christian man, and it 100% concerns me. But at the same time, unfortunately, we are living in a society that has decided by its own means of checks and balances that abortion is legal. I abhor it. I abhor everything about it. Okay? But the key to both these men is what will they do and what will they say to win the office. Okay.
I think Robert, you make a fair point, and it's, we appreciate that contribution. Thank you so much, and appreciate your opinion and your calling in. Make sure it's not your last time. Turning now to Carol from Texas. Carol from Texas, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi there. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. What can I do for you, ma'am?
Well, I was listening earlier in the week, and Tony had Marsha Blackburn on. And she was speaking about the congressional committee that had been put together to look into the profiteering by the procurement organizations that procured the fetal specimens and things like this.
Right, and something about that caught your attention?
I'm sorry?
And something about that caught your attention?
Yes, it did. It's not simply that. It's that I am constantly hearing about, well, we've got a congressional committee that is investigating this, but nothing ever comes of it. They investigated Benghazi. They investigated Hillary's emails.
And so what do you want to see, Carol? What do you want to see out of this? Obviously, you're thinking, okay, this isn't enough.
I want to see something. I want to see something done besides just a committee that meets and says, oh, well, this is wrong. This is, I want to see these people pay. There's got to be a penalty. There has to be a penalty for what Hillary has done.
Well, something like that would be something for either legislation passing Congress or something for the executive branch. It's you can be engaged on that and try and make that an issue for the election. We appreciate you bringing it to our attention. Thank you, Carol. Turning now to Daniel in West Virginia. Daniel in West Virginia, you're on Washington Watch. Daniel, you with us?
Yes.
What can we do for you, sir?
How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, so I was telling the call screener, basically Donald Trump has been a liberal most of his career. He has been wishy-washy like a liberal. He probably didn't realize the kind of adulation he would get when he got into this, and certainly his ego is big enough to want more of it. But he definitely is a front runner, and as a front runner, he cannot articulate the real issues. Still, cannot articulate the real issues at hand. The bathroom issues are just one more gaffe in his position with what he's running on. We're going to see the real Donald Trump here in the next several weeks.
So you think the mask is coming down? You think that this has been posturing, and that now now we're starting to see the real deal?
Yeah, but God bless Donald Trump. God bless him. He opened up the door to a lot of issues that weren't being talked about, and thank God for it.
Certainly provoked some big conversations.
That the contested convention is what's going to pull off a Ted Cruz nomination.
All right, that's Daniel from West Virginia calling in with a different perspective from the gentleman that we had on just a moment before. But that's part of what makes this show great, that we get a multiplicity of opinions on here. We let you inform us and teach us. And Daniel, thank you so much for that. Turning now to Pam from Ohio. Pam from Ohio, you're on Washington Watch.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to comment. I would just like to say about Ted Cruz, when he won Iowa, he said, "To God be the glory." And for me, is there any? And I'd like to say to all the Christians listening, is there anything more important than that? A man who's willing to be led by God. And I say, if we went back in time, who would you vote for, David or Goliath? Would you vote for the taller, the stronger, the one that has more sheep, the more logical one, or would you vote for the man who's willing to be led by God and actually able to say the name of Jesus Christ in front of the public? A lot of people say that they're Christians, but they're not even able to say the name of Jesus. And I give him a lot of credit. He's, as far as being the person who's against the establishment, he's the one that stands up to whether they're Republicans or Democrats, and that's why he's not popular. But he's a man who's willing to be led by God. That's important to me.
So, Pam, you, the way you think of it is when you hear people from both sides pile on Ted Cruz, you say it's because he's standing on principle and because he's saying things and doing things that you agree with, and that if someone's gonna say unkind things about you, that that's a great reason to have someone do it.
Absolutely. I think he has had the courage and the he's had the courage, and he's also had the strength to say things that are not popular.
All right. Well, Pam, thank you for sharing. We appreciate your thoughts. Turning now to Paul from Missouri. Paul from Missouri, you're on Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Sir, I have a different perspective, and I would like to ask a question regarding the religious liberty laws that have been passed in different legislatures.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my question concerns the deeply held, sincerely held religious belief and the justification for denial of service to certain individuals who don't share a certain perspective or outlook or behavior. My concern is that you could just as easily substitute, say, black, Hispanic, or non-believer, Muslim, Jew, for whatever.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah, let me go ahead. We only have 90 seconds, so let me go ahead and jump in on that. Like in the cases of, let's take, for example, the Oregon Bakers, who are clients of mine, Aaron and Melissa Klein. In their case, they've had gay customers before. They've never turned away a customer because they're gay. They have had people approach them who were not gay. They've had heterosexual people approach them for cakes, not for, again, just buying cupcakes or cookies or whatever. Anyone can do that at any time. But when they were asking for someone to make them a cake that conveyed a specific message, there were multiple times that they said no. They had people approach them for bachelor parties, for divorce parties. Sometimes they asked for a cake in the shape of a particular body organ or whatnot. And they said at each step, they said that as Christians, that they wanted to use their business as a ministry and one that would showcase biblical truth and honor God as they walk with the Lord Jesus Christ. And so for them, they were happy to have gay customers. They were not willing to bake a wedding cake that specifically celebrated a wedding that was not between a man and a woman, just as they didn't for divorce parties, bachelor parties, etc. But we appreciate so much you calling. Thank you all for calling in to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.